It wasn't that long ago that if you went into hospital with something, you would not expect to come out. And so there are great goods that have been given to us, and we've got to remember they are given to us by God through human beings, and we can be very grateful for those. But I think it's just worth asking the question, when we are given something with technology, what are we losing? Or what different view of the world does it give us?
Hello and welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast for church leaders in FIEC churches and other churches too. You're very welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Adrian Reynolds. I'm Head of National Ministries for FIEC, and I'm joined today by Nathan Weston. Hello, Nathan. How are you doing?
Hello. Yeah, really well, thank you.
We are joined together by technology, which seems appropriate because we're talking about technology today. But first of all, Nathan, just tell us where you're joining us from.
I'm joining you today from sunny Lancaster, although I've just noticed it has started raining, which is about right. Yeah. I'm here in Lancaster, yeah.
The rain is on its way. We're south of you. I can tell you the rain is on its way. It's very wet. And we have had some heavy showers this morning. So if you suddenly hear this very funny noise in the background, it's the rain pouring onto the side of our building. Nathan, tell us what you do and a little bit about yourself there at Moorlands.
Yeah, I'm married to Sean. I have three children. Eldest is 13. We have been in Lancaster for about 20 years with a little break to go to Bible college in the middle of that. But I've been the associate pastor of Moorlands Church in Lancaster for the last 11 years.
Great. And it's interesting then a 13-year-old just beginning to really talk about technology and how it impacts life. And what we're going to do, we think we're going to record a couple of podcasts. This is the first of a little sort of tiny mini series, I guess. And as soon as I start thinking about technology, my children are grown up, but I've got grandchildren now. As soon as we start thinking about technology, I immediately think, how do I stop children, grandchildren getting obsessed with their smartphone? That's the kind of, you know, I can't help myself. And I think that's the way actually the media, you know, talks about this subject. We've got to do some groundwork though, haven't we? Just help us with that, Nathan. We're living in a technological age. Is that new technology? I kind of feels like this is unprecedented. So technology is all new, right?
Not necessarily, although I do think there are particular challenges to this age. I think we do live in a very technological age, and we have a technological worldview, which I think is relatively new, a couple of hundred years new. But we do need to go a bit back before we start talking about that. Technology is not just the things with screens and buttons that go beep. Technology is a much broader thing than that. That my favorite definition of technology is taking a created thing or an assemblage of created things and putting them to purposeful use in the world. That is what technology is in its most basic form. It's taking something, putting it together in some way, and putting it to purposeful use. So a spade is technology. You know, a horse-drawn plow is technology. A piano is technology. A building is technology. And so when we start thinking about that, you think, well, actually, the Bible has much more to say about technology generally than it does about the particular challenge we face right now with smartphones and all the rest of it.
Right.
And so, go on.
What's the danger of launching straight into applications, let's say, without doing that biblical groundwork? Where might we misstep and go wrong if we don't do that groundwork that we're about to do?
Yeah, well, I suppose one of the things is that you end up really focusing on the particular latest challenge and the latest device. And strangely enough, that is a feature of our technological world. And with the pace of change that we're living through, our attention is constantly focused on the latest and the newest and the now. And that is part of the danger, actually, to think properly and rightly about the very latest thing that's coming down the track. You need to think deeply and well about how God views the world that he's made. We need to know what this world is for. We need to know what we are for before we can think about, well, how do I use my smartphone or this app or what is AI? We need to do that work well.
That's really helpful to hear, because I think the danger for us is we're always catastrophizing. And maybe that's a feature of my age. I'm in my mid-50s. So, you know, I think back to the golden age of the 80s. But probably my parents were, you know, overwhelmed by the golden age of the 80s. I don't know. So there is a danger, isn't it, that everything becomes a catastrophe. Mm-hmm. Everything becomes a crisis, that, you know, the world's about to end. essentially. And yeah, if we don't put things in context, and that wider biblical context that we're talking about.
Absolutely. And every age has its discipleship challenges, doesn't it? And every age has its idolatries. And I think it is a real discipleship challenge, and the use of technology and our apparent mastery of the world with technology is an idolatry that we are tempted towards. But we mustn't make the mistake of just going for nostalgia and saying, well, Christianity was so much easier in the 1920s or the 1840s. It wasn't, it was just different. And that is not to downplay the challenge we're facing.
Yeah, so the world of flesh and the devil have always been present in some
always
form.
Been around.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. So help us here then, Nathan. Let's go back to first principles. What's our starting place when we begin to think about what God has created and put into the world for our use? Where do we begin with that?
Begin at the beginning, I suppose. If you think about what life was like and how God created life to be back in the garden, back in Genesis, we are made in the image of a creator God. And so it is not surprising that we are creative people, that we have been given the mandate to fill the earth and subdue it. And I think that one of the ways that was always intended to happen was through some use of technology. Now, Adam and Eve had the garden; they had all the fruits. They could live quite happily in the garden without any technology at all. But I think there's an idea that they were supposed to extend the reach of that garden to fill the earth. And so we can imagine perhaps a world where Adam one day invents the spade, and it's this glorious, delightful thing, and there is clearly an idea that making things that advance God's purposes, that are beautiful and useful, is a profoundly good thing. And so we should be very grateful for the technology that we're able to use. But I suppose we've then got a bit of an issue, a huge issue, which is the fall. We don't live in the garden anymore. And the fall has really changed our use of technology, and it's changed us as users of technology. So one of the things, and two things to draw out, one of the things is that we no longer use technology as a beautiful, wonderful, optional thing that we choose to use. We now need to use technology. It's a brutal necessity for living life in a fallen world. You know, think of the curse of Genesis 3. Adam is going to have to scratch out a living into the ground. And if he can
Let me understand that, because that seems quite important. It's not just that I as a human being are fallen, and therefore my motives and my ultimate desires are warped. Mm. It's that the curse is on the earth as well.
Yeah.
And therefore that's going to impact not just how I view it, but the world in itself.
Absolutely. The world is cursed, and childbirth is painful. You know, if we're not going to die a lot, which we are anyway, but if we're going to mitigate the effects of the fall at all, we are going to need epidurals and gas and air and forceps and spades and plows. And even then, a lot of us are going to die. It is a hard world to live in, and therefore technology becomes almost a brutal necessity, as I said. Mm. But you touched on the other and perhaps the more pertinent effect of the fall, which is that my creation and my use of technologies is going to be corrupted, whatever I do. Mm. And you see that in the very, very first use of technology, I think, is Adam and Eve sewing fig leaves together to make clothes for themselves. So I think that's the first human use of technology that we've got recorded in the Bible. And what is it doing? It's an attempt to hide from God, to cover shame. And it's blatantly inadequate. And the Lord has to make different clothes for them immediately because it's so poor. And of course, he does that through animal skins and perhaps an animal sacrifice, but that's a whole other issue. So you have the twisted view of everything. And the next major point in the Bible, I think, where you see that really clearly and really instructively, is in the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11. So the starting point for the Tower of Babel is a new technology. They invent brick and mortar. I'm in Lancaster here, North Lancashire. This is dry stone wall territory. And you can only build a dry stone wall so high before it falls over. And so now they've got this new technology. They can put bricks together with tar. And so they start to think, oh, hang on a minute. Forget this of filling the earth and subduing it nonsense. Let's stick here. Let's make a massive great tower because we can do that now. And let's challenge God and let's make a name for ourselves. Now, it's very clear that it wasn't that the invention of mortar made them into sinners, but that new technology they invented, because they are sinners, unlocked a new way of sinning and a latent desire that was in their heart. And so we just have to be aware that that is what we will always do with the created goods of technology. We'll always try to find some way to make it serve our purposes and to gain mastery over the world, putting ourselves in God's place with it.
So I find what you're saying, they're really helpful to me, because you're putting the emphasis and the burden back on the heart for how we deal with things. So it's not that technology is intrinsically good and bad in and of itself. It's how it's used. Or is that too simplistic?
I think it might be a little bit too simplistic. Certainly there is a real the onus is on us to use technology well, and we can use technologies for good or for evil. And I can't really think of maybe there are technologies that can only be used for good or can only be used for evil, but I struggle to find many. Most technologies could be used either for good or for evil. But I think it's probably a little too simplistic to say, you haven't used this word, but I have heard this word used, that technology is sort of neutral. I don't think it is neutral.
I almost use that word.
Almost.
So I'll own it for the minute. Is technology neutral, Nathan?
No, Angel, stupid idea. No, it's not a stupid idea at all, but there is an element. So every technology, I think, has a story to tell about what constitutes human flourishing, about how we should live well. So, and most of those, some of those stories might be quite uncontroversial, but even take that very simple one of bricks and mortar. What story does that tell about how we should live our world? It says that we should be, that humans work best when we're staying in one place and we're building very secure, quite permanent structures around ourselves. Now that might be absolutely fine. A nomadic tribe, though, who live in tents, might say, hang on a minute, that doesn't sound right to us at all. So, and that's just quite a simple example. Other more advanced, I suppose, technologies will tell us very different stories about how humans ought to live. So, for example, the technology that we're using right now, which I'm grateful for, because I didn't have to drive to Market Harbour this morning to
I didn't have to
course.
Drive to Lancaster, so the feeling's mutual.
Thank you. but it's telling us a story. It's saying that human life is better when people who are a long way away can communicate in real time. Now, you might want to say, okay, I buy that story. But I think as Christians, it's incumbent on us to think, well, does that match with the Bible story about what humans are for, what human flourishing is about, what our purposes are? How does that relate? And so we've just got to be clear what story is our technology telling, and particularly in our modern world, where the inventors and owners of technology are present within their technologies. You know, when I turn my smartphone on, the people who make the apps can update them overnight. So we're in a constant conversation about what my phone is for. Then we have to just be aware, are they telling the same story as the Bible is telling?
Yeah. And I suppose maybe this is a ridiculous example. I don't know. I'm happy to be shot down. I'm a bit of a duffer, really. But if you take something like the internet, I can see how that can be used for good and evil, right? Yeah. Once someone says, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to invent the dark web as a way of hiding identity so that things can be done without knowledge and whatever, that does seem to me to be less neutral.
Yeah. I think that's fair. The thing that complicates that story is the sort of unintended consequences of someone invents something for one reason and it can be used for another. And I'm off the top of my head, I can't think of examples of that, but people, your listeners will be able to, that you invent something with one purpose, but then it can be used for various other purposes. So I don't think that anybody invented social media with the express purpose of sharing the gospel, but it can be used for that. And there'll be examples the other way as well. And I suppose one thing that particularly modern technologies, but every technology does in a sense, is every technology in some senses removes limits from us. It sort of, and it enables us to do more than we could do without it. And that's not a bad thing. You know, if you're going to dig a hole in a garden to plant a seed, you could do it with your hands, I suppose, but having a spade is better, and maybe having a digger is better than that, or but every technology removes limits from us. Right. And we've got to map that against the Bible story. The Bible story tells us that we are by design limited people. We are by design dependent and small. And that is on purpose, even before the fall, that is on purpose, so that we learn that we're not gods, that we learn to depend on God, that we learn to trust him in things. And so technology which removes limits from us and encourages us to see the world as raw material for us to do what we want with, that is telling a very powerful story to us that we will want to believe, but that is very different from the Bible story.
Right. So this is really helpful to me, Nathan, because I think once we started talking about creation and then the fall with respect to technology, and I guess we're going to get to redemption at some point. Yeah, we're going to map that across the Bible story. Mm. I think the temptation is just to say, let's observe where technology is in the Bible and perhaps how we relate to it. But you're helping me to think a bit more, well, dare I say, philosophically about it, you know, a bit more deeply about it, to say, actually, what is technology doing? So I'm really struck by this idea of removing boundaries from us. Yeah. And presumably, you know, we have to do some evaluation at some point. God wants us to flourish. Yep. He wants us to be able, you know, the ground is cursed. We understand why that is, but he wants us to be able to dig the soil.
Absolutely. And so it is not, I mean, I would much rather be living at this time, I think, than I would most of the rest of history, simply because I will probably live longer. I'll be healthier. I'll be more comfortable. It wasn't that long ago that if you went into hospital with something, you would not expect to come out. And so there are great goods that have been given to us, and we've got to remember they are given to us by God through human beings, and we can be very grateful for those. But I think it's just worth asking the question, when we are given something with technology, what are we losing, or what different view of the world does it give us? And I think particularly in this world where we have a tendency developed over the last couple of hundred years, just to, as soon as we come up with a problem, we immediately think of a technological solution for it. Yeah, that's just the way we think. Yeah. We think, okay, a pandemic has struck, right? Well, we need vaccines, and we need this, and we need that, and we'll just sort it with technology. And we have this view of the world that we're in control of it, really, because our technology is so advanced. And things like a pandemic that take us out of control of things are just an aberration, really. But the Bible will give us a much broader picture of God, that he is in control of things and everything comes from his hand. It would give us a different view of ourselves, that we are not masters of this universe, that we're limited beings whose design is to love God and love each other and in dependence on God. And it gives us a different view of the world, that it is not raw material for us to do whatever we want with, but it is an arena for God's glory and for his purposes to flourish. And also that this world is not all there is. So we're moving very quickly through the Bible story. So let's perhaps think about that redemption.
Yeah.
When Christ comes, what does he achieve in the gospel? It is notable that He acts in space and time and real history. And the means of our salvation, in one sense, is a technology. It's wood and nails and a tomb. And that's not the first time that God uses a technological solution to the problem of sin. Back in the Exodus, how do we free from the Exodus? Kill a lamb, take a hyssop, make a paintbrush, paint it on your door. These are technological means that God harnesses to save his people. And yet, our Savior is not wood and nails. Our Savior is a person. Our Savior is the Lord Jesus. And when he comes into the world, he shows the kind of mastery over this world that a technologist can only dream of, but he always uses it for God's purposes, for the love of others, for human flourishing. And when people are rescued by Christ, you see that their attitude to the world and even their attitude to technology changes. So I think you can see that in the book of Acts. I think it was Clark, the science fiction author, who said that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Well, magic was the technology of the ancient world. And in Ephesus particularly, the use of what was called Ephesian letters, the sort of magic scrolls, was the way people used creative things to try and gain mastery over this world. But when a significant proportion of the city become Christians, well, what happens? I've got some verses here from Acts 19. Many of those who believed now came and openly confessed what they'd done. A number who practiced sorcery brought their scrolls together and burned them publicly. When they calculated the value of the scrolls, the total came to 50,000 drachmas. In this way, the word of the Lord spread widely and grew in power. So there you have a repudiation of a particular form of technology that the people have realized, oh, hang on a minute, this is idolatrous, this is sinful, this is not how God would have us live. And at great cost to ourselves, and in a way that is very weird to the rest of our city, we are going to say no to that technology. But it doesn't mean that the early Christians said no to all technology. Paul got on a boat and he sailed places. He wrote letters with parchment and ink. And so there is now this reconfiguring of the world around, well, what would Christ have me do? And that will mean saying yes to some technologies in the service of the gospel. And it will say it means saying no to other technologies that perhaps the whole world is saying yes to, because it cannot help us live for Christ, or it will be a significant detriment to us living for Christ.
Let's kind of leap forward at the risk of using a phrase used elsewhere, the great leap forward. There obviously have been moments in history where great progress has been made, mm-hmm. and technology has shifted extensively. We could spend half an hour mapping those, would be quite interesting, but we're slightly running out of time. Let's come to now. You hinted this at the beginning. It does feel that the world we're living in now is either qualitatively or quantitatively very different from, say, 30, 40, 50 years ago, even though we've acknowledged there have always been challenges, or actually both quantitatively and qualitatively different in the way that we interact with technology. Is that a fair assessment, or am I overstating the case there?
I think there has been a real sea change. I think it probably goes further back than 50 years. As I said before, I think the sort of Enlightenment and the Renaissance and eras where people began to get a real hold of scientific technique and to use that in brand new ways to almost remove all limits from us and give us almost complete mastery over the world. We know that's not true, but I think perhaps in the, let's say, 1600s, 1700s, you would no one would ever really feel like they were in control of the world. It just wasn't really possible. Post-Industrial Revolution, we sort of feel like we are. We sort of feel like we're, so there is an attitudinal shift, I think, there by the sheer quality, I suppose, and quantity of the technology we're able to produce. But there is also it's difficult to know what's the chicken and what's the egg there. That sense of reduced dependence on God, that actually, if we are in mastery of the world, then atheism just becomes that little much more plausible, which perhaps it wasn't as plausible as it was let's say 250 years ago. But yes, I think that moving into the sort of after the Industrial Revolution, we've had sort of the Information Revolution or the Computer Revolution, whatever you want to call it. Like I say, the speed of change and the amount of novelty and also the ubiquity of very advanced technology is very, very different. So just think about entertainment as an idea. So maybe 150 years ago, what was entertainment? I mean, you someone could play the piano perhaps in your room if you were rich family, or you might have told stories around the hearth By the way, the Latin word for hearth is focus. That's the very focus of your family life. And so you would gather around the hearth together and you'd tell stories, or maybe you go to see a play or you go to see the local whatever. So there's limited opportunities for entertainment.
My relatives are all at the music hall. Just so
yes,
you know.
Exactly. Brilliant. So you go together to a place, or you do that. Then you have the television age, where now the focus of the room is no longer the hearth, it's the TV. And we move our furniture on the
side. Radio age before that? I kind of
radio age before that, yeah. Wireless, that
people
same idea.
Around the wireless, yeah.
Exactly. And then what was interesting there is you then get a much broader, this is slightly off topic, but a much broader national culture, because everyone's watching the same TV, everyone's listening to the same radio broadcasts. And so you get a sort of more cohesive national culture, but more homogenous. And now we're in the age where everybody, we've got central heating, so we've all retired to our own rooms in warmth. And so that's one technology. The other technology is we all have our own individual devices. And so now you can watch your own. I could be watching on my phone something completely different to what my whole family is there watching on their devices. We're watching, nothing is the same. We're all in our own family. We're quite fragmented. Maybe we have sort of homogeneity with a very disparate group of people scattered all over the world. And that feels more like our people and our community than the people I'm just in the same room as, or my country, my nation. The cultures and ideals of our nations. And so that sense of things falling apart and fragmentation, it's not solely caused by technology, but the advanced technologies that we all have in our pockets now have significantly advanced that sense of fragmentation and disunity and not really sure where our culture and where our values are coming from.
I can see how that is. I can see how that is different, but I can also see how that's not entirely new. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the invention of the printing press.
Yep.
You know, we could have all been round the hearth listening to one person tell a story, but actually we could each equally, especially when you've got the light to do so, each be reading a different book.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's useful just to see these things in a continuation, isn't it? You know, a continuum, rather than saying that it's all brand new all the time.
That's right. That's exactly right. I think the difference is the sort of democratization of those options.
Yeah, yeah.
Every single one of us, if we wanted to, have got a very relatively cheap smartphone on which you can get anything you want anytime you want. And that's new, I think.
Let's finish off by doing a little worked example, if we can, Nathan. Just a bit earlier, you said that, you know, whenever we're thinking about technology, we've got to step back and think about what difference is it making to us? You know, what boundaries is it removing? So let's take an example. I don't mind what it is. What do you want to suggest? Let's take a work example of something. Let's take the dishwasher.
Yeah, okay.
Let's be non-controversial.
I think the dishwasher let's take
something and work it through. What does that look like to think that way about, say, the dishwasher?
Yeah.
Have you got a dishwasher, by the way?
I have got a dishwasher, yes.
I've got a dishwasher. I love it.
I love it too. And the reason I love it is because I don't have to do the washing up. And I can just put everything away and it sort of does it all for me. And I say, you know, by the way, 1 Timothy 4, nothing is to be rejected if it's received with thanksgiving. So if you're listening to this podcast and you've never thanked the Lord in prayer for your dishwasher, why not stop it and do it now?
I am full of praise for my dishwasher, I tell you.
There we go.
Over this weekend. Brilliant, yeah.
But what it's worth asking, okay, it's gained us a lot. It's gained us speed and time and space in our kitchen and all the rest of it. What has it lost us? Maybe it has lost us something in that what were we doing before? Well, I would be at the sink concentrating on doing the dishes. So I've lost a sort of limited time there where I could only do one thing. And we might think, well, that's in our modern way of thinking, we think that's a terrible thing, you know. But actually, giving your attention to something and focusing on it is a very important discipline. It's something that is very useful to us in our Christian lives as we give our attention to the word or to prayer or to people. And so the disciplines of rhythms of attention and focus we may have lost a bit of that. But there's also a communal aspect to washing up. So I might have done the washing up and I might have asked my son, can you come and do the drying? And we might have had 20 minutes, half an hour there where we could have chatted and talked about the day and had that sort of side-by-side time that is so precious. And so we've lost that. Now, does that mean I'm going to go downstairs and disconnect our dishwasher? Don't think so. I think on balance, we'll keep it. But it is worth asking ourselves, okay, I've saved myself 20 minutes there or so, or half an hour doing the dishwasher. how am I going to use that 20 minutes? What is that extra time for? Am I just going to now browse Twitter, or am I going to use that time well to love God and to love my neighbour?
Yes, Tim Chester's written a whole book on it. So if you want to know about dishwashers, but you're right. I mean, you can imagine after a meal, having a very meaningful conversation with someone. Mm-hmm. So yes, if you were to replace that with more time for your family devotions, maybe, or talking about a spiritual subject all around the meal table together, then you think, great, that's serving us well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Great. That's really helpful. Listen, we're out of time just to talk about the principles. We're going to do another podcast where we start thinking about how we apply these, Nathan, but that's a really good start. I must ask you, though, there is one theological question we've not answered, which is quite important, which is, does a cutlery go in handle up first or handle down in the dishwasher?
I don't want to bind people's conscience, but definitely handle down. Better cleaning.
So actually, those dishwashers with the tray that come out that you can lay them in, that's the latest technological development.
I do have that. So living the technological dream up here.
Yeah, well, I'm quite, at this point now, I'm slightly jealous of your technology. Nathan, listen, thanks so much for joining us. It's been really helpful. And we'll chat again soon. If you've enjoyed the podcast, do rate and review it. It helps people to find it. And we'll meet you again soon. Thanks very much.